Welcome to Shoe Swap Food Conversations on CKVS 93.7 FM, the voice of the Shoe Swap. Host Warren Bell is here with a new season of local, regional, and international guests in conversation about getting our food system back to local, nutritious, high-quality foods that produce and promote health, wellness, and sustainable communities. Now, here's your host, Warren Bell, to introduce today's guest.
Thank you very much, Tom, and welcome everyone to Food Conversations Season 4. Now, before we begin, we acknowledge that we are living and working on the ancestral, unceded, and essentially stolen lands of the Shkrepmuk people, and that fairly resolving this situation is an ongoing responsibility for us all. Now, today I have the pleasure of welcoming into our studio via Zoom from Revelstoke, Kelsey Gasparini, the Executive Director of Revelstoke's Local Food Initiative, or LFI, an organization with a program focused on enhancing food security in that community, a goal very similar to that of the Shuswap Food Action Society here in Salmon Arm, and of course, the Food Conversations program itself. Welcome, Kelsey.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you very much for joining us on the show. In Revelstoke and Salmon Arm and in many other communities in BC and around the nation and the entire planet, people are traveling once again along the same old/new path, challenging the increasingly outmoded and vulnerable system we've developed over the past 75 years, a system in which food is shipped thousands of kilometers around the world from countries where labor and land is cheap to consumers in wealthy countries like ours who in the past were often content with food quantity and not so much interested in food quality. And there was no food community. But for most of our existence on the planet, food was always local. Either we gathered and hunted it locally, or we grew and raised it locally. We did so by cooperating with Mother Nature, without the use of potentially toxic agrochemicals, and on the lands near where we lived. And we did it with our community, with a wealth of connections to the people and the place where we lived that enriched our lives and brought us back to the roots of human endeavor, working together for the betterment of all our lives. And that's where the Revelstoke Local Food Initiative comes in, and Kelsey Gasparini is here to tell us what it does as well as why she is enthusiastic about playing a part in its activities. Now, Kelsey, you didn't always live in Revelstoke. Sudbury was the place where you started, and many people have this vision of Sudbury as a mining town that's been polluted with, you know, ore and all sorts of stuff. But in fact, that's not what you experienced when you were growing up. You were out and about on the lakes.
Yeah. So Sudbury was actually in the 1950s. It was the destination of where NASA tested for the moon landing, because it was so dead. So that's what it was like in the 1950s. We actually did a giant regreening process, and I think they just planted their like 10 millionth tree or something a couple years ago. So I grew up more in that era of it. I was lucky enough to grow up near a lake, which Sudbury has 300 lakes within a 100 kilometer radius of downtown, and it could be a really beautiful, a really outdoorsy, welcoming place if you're able to get out of the main downtown core.
And you grew up in a family. I mean, obviously there was an Italian side of your family, and then it was the other side of your family, which was more kind of pan-European. But it was a big family, and food and family gatherings went together.
Yeah, for sure. I think my first introduction and my first memories of food in general are those that we shared as a family. I think I have about 40 cousins, and we used to get together on a pretty regular basis and all share a good potluck. So I think I got to be really lucky growing up in Sudbury, and I had this incredible supportive family, and we got to celebrate a lot, and I was super privileged in that way.
Now, Salmon Arm's bigger than Revelstoke by quite a margin, but it sounds like your family, and if you have 40 cousins, my Lord, remembering all their names is probably a bit of a challenge. But obviously, family and community ended up being an important part in your life there as well.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's kind of what got me, what what's hard to leave and what makes sure you need to find a new community is that sense of the people around you. I always came from a group of people that were doing things that were good and important and showed me kind of the right direction. And so when I moved towns and needed to find a new group of people to be around, I needed them to be people that were moving in the same direction and passionate and positive and making sure that we could come together and had things to celebrate.
So do you think of some important values that your family imbued you with that mattered to you, that you were looking for when you were traveling? And we'll talk about your travels in a moment, but that were important to you, that you wanted to find wherever you ended up?
I think my parent, my whole family, I have three older sisters and we care lots about each other and we show up for each other and we support each other. And I think I was really lucky in that sense that I always had someone there for me. And so when I was out in the world looking for other people, I wanted to find people that would support me in whatever I was doing. So if that was gardening or climbing mountains or just hanging out, I always had a good, strong system at home that cared about me and loved me. And so I knew that those kind of people existed in the world. And so I went looking for them.
Well, it sounds like from our conversation earlier that you found them in the mighty metropolis of Revelstoke. You went on from your early years in Sudbury to study at the University of Waterloo, a BA in recreation and sport business. So obviously, physical activity was a central feature in your life as well as this sort of community sense. Outdoor sports mostly?
Yeah, I grew up playing competitive soccer and kind of then anything else that wound up in my available to me. I remember I played slow pitch for a while just because a couple of the girls from school was doing it. I used to play on all my high school sports teams. I don't know that I was ever like the best athlete in the crew. I was never bad at anything, but I was never like the all-star. But I always really enjoy the team atmosphere. And physical fitness, I think, is the best way for me to stay mentally healthy and physically healthy. And especially out here in Revelstoke now, it's a component of our lives aggressively. I think it's one of the beautiful things about Revelstoke is that we have this incredible environment that you can go and play in so many different ways, if it's on your bike or in your feet or on your skis. And so that started really young. I never downhill skied when I was younger, but we always cross-country skied. So that kind of got me into it. Definitely just being outside a lot. It was always a priority in my life to just be outside. I think it answers a lot of the questions of the day of going outside.
A telling feature is that all of the core staff for the local food initiative in Revelstoke have had their pictures taken in front of a mountain. I think that tells us something about what's going on there.
We do that to show off. We're just trying to show off what we have.
Well, what you also have is, and this is a feature of British Columbia, you have an ecosystem that is very, very interesting because Revelstoke has made records for precipitation both in the winter and in the summer that are unparalleled in many other towns. So there's an interesting feature there. You're never going to run short of water in Revelstoke, whereas other parts of the province do.
Yeah. No, it's crazy. The amount of snow we get is wild. Last year, my whole house, from the street, you couldn't see my house because the snowbank was so tall.
I don't live
in that short of a house.
No. There you are. Just remind listeners that I'm speaking with Kelsey Gasparini, who is the executive director of the Local Food Initiative in Revelstoke. And we're going to be talking about the food initiative shortly, and because it's a very active organization in Revelstoke. After you got your degree, you did what many young people do, and I think maybe most, which is take off and look around to see the world. And you did quite a bit of traveling with your technology. Your technology for traveling was being a waitress, and that allows you to pay for your travels, I presume, and also meet people. So tell us a little bit about your traveling life, that section of your life.
I kind of figured out that you could go and waitress in really remote places and make a bunch of money, and then you could go travel off that money for a couple months. And so I started in university, and I started coming out west, and I went to Emerald Lake Lodge, which is just on Highway 1,
Very lovely.
outside of Field. And I worked. It's a beautiful, really such a beautiful spot. And then I worked on an island off of Vancouver Island, and eventually, my third year, I went up to Hippa Island. Sorry, the Haida Gwaii, which I lived off an island called Hippa Island, but the
Yes.
Haida Gwaii
Yeah.
is where I was, which was so awesome. It's one of the most incredible places in the world, I think. And then that kind of led me to realize like I could go and I could explore. And so once I was done university, I went and I traveled all over Southeast Asia and New Zealand and Australia, and got to work in some really cool restaurants, and kept going around Europe, and lived in Ireland for a bit, and I worked in some Irish pubs, and that was such an awesome experience. And went down to South America and Central America for a little bit, and I really got lucky and was able to figure out that I put maybe getting a giant savings account aside, and just made sure that I always had enough, and I got to see a bunch of the world and have a bunch of experiences, and meet some really incredible people, and really got to spread my wings. And so I did that for probably about 6 years.
So, you first came out to BC with your grandparents, and it had an impact on you. What was it like arriving in this mountainous, rugged part of the world?
The first time I ever saw mountains was when I was 18 years old, and my grandparents and I took a trip across Canada via the train, and so they put the globe cart on in Edmonton, and so you hit Jasper for the first time, and you're sitting in a globe cart with windows from knees to knees, and I just remember being stunned. It was just like it was really something that I don't even know if I knew existed, which is crazy because my parents like showed me pictures and we did travel, but it was something that I had never even thought about, and never knew that I needed. And as soon as I saw them, I knew that this was it,
You needed an injection of mountain
They're
into your
pretty
life.
breathtaking. I definitely did, and once I did it, it was hard to get out.
So when you came back each year, it was getting another fix of the mountains and the variable landscape. I mean, it's mountains, islands, ocean, lakes, far more various than many other parts of the world.
Yeah, I think I came into BC and was like, oh, this is cool, and then kept coming more into BC and thought, oh, this is really cool, and just kept finding more and more wicked places, and kept blowing my mind. And I'm sure my mom was freaking out because she knew I was never coming home. But it's just we're really lucky in British Columbia. We're really lucky in Canada in general, and British Columbia is just such a unique, incredible landscape. And I think I came here for the mountains, but you're right. There's all these other amazing things. I just got to see the ocean, and being up in the Haida Gwaii was, that's something incredible that I'd recommend to anyone. And we live in this really special spot. And to be honest, even once I started traveling, I remember I lived in New Zealand for a while, and I loved it, and I thought I'd live there forever. And then I thought, well, BC's pretty great too.
Kelsey, you'll be interested to know that the English poet Rupert Brooke came out to Canada, and when he found the Rockies, he was totally intimidated by them because he'd never seen anything like this in England. And he went back home and said, "I can't live here. It's the world is too big out in this colony of ours," which, thank God, is no longer a colony. So let's move on a little bit to you arriving in Revelstoke. What specifically drew you to Revelstoke and got you kind of hooked? I think the term is Revelstuck. What got you Revelstuck?
I had been living in a couple different places, and I had tried a stint living in the Cayman Islands, and I don't really like being warm. So that didn't go super well. And so I messaged one of my girlfriends who I had lived with in New Zealand. And I was like, I just don't know what's next, and I need to find something else. And I had kind of thought, I knew I was, I was getting a bit older, and I wanted to start settling down and maybe get a real job and a real life a little bit. And I had been in Sudbury for about a month, and had thought about maybe staying there. And And then his girlfriend said, like, you gotta come out. You gotta come see this. And I said, okay, I'll go out for one, a couple months, you know, I'll go out for 4 or 5 months and I'll see what it's about. I wasn't a skier. But like I said, I have a bit of athletic ability. So I was like, I'll figure it out. It's not like that's a hard hill. That was a lie. It was a very hard hill to learn to ski on. So I came out and I got a ski pass and I bought some skis and cried a couple times in the ski hill because I was scared, and then figured it out. And then, you know, skiing became mountain biking and figured that out and thought, man, this place is amazing. And just really got hooked. I had this great group of girlfriends that I was lucky enough to kind of know from New Zealand. And then the kind of people that were here, it ended up that I actually had a couple of friends in town that I didn't even know because of my travels, and very like-minded people I find end up in Revelstoke. I made a joke just the other night that I think 70% of the people that live in Revelstoke have either traveled or lived in New Zealand. Like, you don't meet anyone here that hasn't been to New Zealand at some point. Like, it, you know, it's just like this thing. I don't know. And very, you know.
And the topography. Topography in New Zealand, especially the South Island, is quite similar to, you know, British Columbia. I mean, lots of mountains. That's why they made Lord of the Rings in New Zealand, because it looked like you could have a lot of mountains around. So you came here.
That was the deal I made with my mom when I was living in the South Island. That was the deal I made with my mom. She said, you know, you can't live there. That's too far away living in New Zealand. I said, okay, fine. I'll move back to Canada, but I'll live in BC. That's not too far away. And it's still too far away, but.
That's all right. It's nice to have a family that thinks you're too far away. That means that they're happy to see you whenever you come back. So the local food initiative, it wasn't the first thing you were thinking of. It became part of your life. How did that happen? How did you get into the food initiative?
Yeah, so I guess it really just started the house I was living in with a couple of my girlfriends. We put in a garden in our backyard, and I realized that the growing climate in Revelstoke was very different than the growing climate I'd ever experienced before, and it actually had a lot more hope and had a lot more potential than any growing climate. And I realized that if I was going to stay somewhere, I was going to grow. You know, I had never been around long enough to see a tomato plant through anywhere else I had lived. And so if I was going to be in one place long enough, I was going to see a tomato plant through, you know. And so I started with that garden. And conveniently, one of the community gardens needed a new coordinator. And I very boldly put my resume in, which was bold because I really had no experience gardening. I had done some landscaping here and there, but and I got the job. Probably there wasn't that many other great candidates, and I got the job, and that started what was one of probably about 15 contracts I held for Local Food Initiative before I became, maybe not quite 15, maybe 10 contracts that I held for Local Food Initiative before I became the executive director. And so just over the next, you know, three or four summers, I ran different gardens and I ran different programs and I ran our events and just did different things for them. And along with them, I worked for the other environmental society in town, running kids programs for them. I just really trying to get a foot in the door in my community. And you know, especially in a town as small as Revelstoke, there's not, you know, it's not a big giant town with a bunch of city with a bunch of job opportunities and a bunch of non-for-profits all looking for workers. It was lots of just kind of taking anything I could get that was somewhat in the field of making a difference and then figuring out how I was going to make a job out of that.
But Revelstoke is also a small enough community that you have a sense of community, that once you get to know one person, then you get to know another person, and then you get to find a circle of people, and they, perhaps because of the topography, you share common interests in the ecosystem, because the ecosystem is so prominent in Revelstoke. I mean, it's everywhere. You're surrounded by mountains and amazing landscapes, and you can go out and sort of enjoy yourself in them. So you sort of drifted into the food community. Was there something about the values and the kind of, you said this is when you were growing up, that there was a sort of sense of values, trying to do the right thing in the world. Was there something about the values that were in the food community that you became involved in that spoke to you?
I think in general, I found that that food could be a way that I personally made a difference. And so the value of wanting to make a change and wanting to do good in the world, I think I found food as a solution to that. And I found that before Revelstoke. I became, you know, I became a vegetarian, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 years before I came to Revy. And I thought that that was the answer, you know, and I had watched some documentaries and I thought, man, if I just stop eating meat, that will be the answer. And I'll make the difference. And then I came to Revelstoke and I got involved in this community where education is actually the answer, right? You need to learn and you need to share and you need to have knowledge about what's going on. And so I came into Revelstoke and I found a network of people that also agreed that food could be the answer. But they were agreeing in a lot of different ways. And so it wasn't that everyone was cutting out meat. You know, it was that people were finding local farmers, that people were celebrating their local food system, that people were growing their own food. So I found this community of people that shared the same moral and the same belief that, like, we need to do something, and also saw that food could be part of that solution for sure, for sure. But there's all these different ways of taking it.
I've got the vision statement of the Local Food Initiative in front of me right now, and it says, the vision that the organization holds is that Revelstoke has a vibrant, resilient local food system, and its mission is, through education, facilitation, and advocacy, we empower the community to enhance local food production and utilization. Now, that sounds like food and community are sort of interlocked. They're not separate issues. The food is part of the community. Is that part of what that is that what you're sort of getting at now? I'm sort of interpreting a little bit, but that sounds like kind of what you're saying, food and community both together.
Yeah, I think for sure. I think everything we do in the Revelstoke Local Food Initiative, it's to create the sense of we have our own local food system, our own local food community. We have our own local farmers. We have our own local gardeners. We can do a big chunk of it by ourselves and together by ourselves, you know.
Yep.
Within this town, we can come together and develop this. And so I think for sure, we're really, you know, I think one of the coolest things about Revy is that we're so small that we get to be close, you know. We're so small that we can't be spread out, that you can't drive an hour to a farm because you're not in Revy anymore. You're in Malacois, you're beyond Malacois, you know. So you have to, we're small. And so we have to have this sense of community and we rely on each other. And so, you know, I can bike from my house to three of our local farms. I can bike from my house easily, like without putting in that much effort, you know? And that's really cool, I think. And so I think for sure, food and community are all wrapped together. And the farther we get away from that notion, the farther we get away from the fact that food and community are one, that's the problem, you know? We need to depend on each other.
I'll just remind listeners that I'm talking with Kelsey Gasparini, who's the executive director of the Revelstoke Local Food Initiative Society, and a very active part of that community indeed. You mentioned how many contracts you had done for the organization, which initially started out a little differently. It was sort of an offshoot, kind of a committee of the North Columbia Environmental Society into 2010. And then there was creation of a downtown community garden and the Garden Guru series. Now, I must ask you, Garden Guru, that's an interesting concept. Kelsey, who's a garden guru and how do you grow one?
So the point of the garden guru is actually that, like, so I was technically the garden guru at one point, but my job was to bring in all the other gurus. So I would say that, you know, anyone that holds that gardening knowledge is a guru. And so we want to get their information and share it. So actually in that program, we run our own radio show and we get our local farmers and our local composters and our local, you know, producers on the show to talk about what they're doing and how they're doing it. It's all about finding the people in our community that have the knowledge and getting them to share it. And so finding different ways to share it. Is it via radio? Is it via social media? But making sure that all their information is available to the community.
And when you set that up, how did you find the community responding to it? I mean, did you have to go and beg people to be on the show, or did they come out of the woodwork and say, I want to share my knowledge? How did that work?
We're pretty lucky in Revy. We have a great, since we are this great community, I think the growers and the farmers and the producers, they know that we're coming and they're willing and eager for when we do, you know? And so I think that they're very busy. And so getting people into the studio is always more difficult than actually getting them to sign up, because we are such a small town. Everyone's doing their own thing and trying to enjoy the environment we live in. So getting them actually in the studio isn't always the easiest thing, but getting me in the studio isn't the easiest thing either. I'd rather be playing. So, but in general, it's pretty easy. We are so supported in this community. We're so lucky to have all the support from farmers or from businesses that we do. And people just shoot their hand up whenever we're looking, which is great. And I think it's also because they know that they have this extremely useful information to share.
Now, the Local Food Initiative Society is a separate society, was created in 2015. And it has a kind of a relationship with another organization called Wild Site Revelstoke. So maybe you can just describe that a little bit. That kind of, I mean, that's the natural environment end of things.
Yeah, so Wild Site Revelstoke is the new North Columbia Environmental Society.
By the way, for listeners, they
took over, I think, 2 years ago.
Listeners should know that we have another guest on the show right now of a canine type. Why don't you tell us who your guest is, our new guest?
I actually, to be honest, there's two of them around me. I have one on my left and one on my right. There's two dogs around me. I run a little bit of a dog sitting company, and so they just showed up ready for their fun.
Well, tell them
they're sorry if there's any noise in the background.
No, tell them they're most welcome. We welcome all guests, no matter how many legs they have. So Wild Site is this sort of. It's the new version of what used to be the North Columbia Environmental Society. And so how does that relationship work out?
Yeah, we're two non-for-profits working in the same community to try to better the environment. And so whenever we can partner up, we do. They're doing some really important projects. There's a couple things in Revelstoke very special to our environment. We have some really special caribou populations. We have some really special frog populations. We also are a community, obviously, that's booming. And so with the tourism development, there's lots to think about as far as our environmental side. So Wild Site Revelstoke is really busy working on those kind of issues. They're a great partner in town. We're able to, when we do work together, it always is fun and great. We did some pollination stuff earlier in the year together, since pollinators are so important to both of our projects, for sure. They work on some really important projects in our community and are essential. And I think the two of us running symbiotically is important.
That's symbiosis is a wonderful word to employ. Now, when I went to the website for the Local Food Initiative, what immediately struck me was that as I scrolled down, I kept on finding yet another garden, another community garden in Revelstoke. And there's a whole whack of them. How many are there now, and what role are they playing in the community?
So we have three large community gardens that we organize, and then we do have a couple smaller like community gardens that we put in, and we don't facilitate as much, but we did create the garden space, and now we allow that to be independently ran. But we have three main ones that we work on. So I run the Revelstoke Visual Arts Center's community garden. So it sits at the Revelstoke Visual Arts Center, and if you come into Revelstoke off Highway 1 at our Bears, it's right there on the right hand side. And it's great. It's a very large garden. It has a xeriscape and a pollination garden next to it, and it's by rental. So people come in and they rent plots there at a very low fee. And when we have communal area to work on.
One quick question: you said xeriscape. Now xeriscape in a town that is notorious for massive amounts of precipitation, that should be a fairly easy project. That's a garden where you don't have to water it because it uses natural water.
You don't have to water it.
It must be an underwater garden in Revelstoke.
Well, to be honest, so we do get a couple dry months here and there, and it is interesting to see that we never, like, even last year, the 40 degree temperatures, we did not water that thing. And, you know, for long extended periods of time in that area, we did go without it getting watered, and it was fine. And I think a big part of it is its ability to manage in its climate, regardless of the water. So it's actually like it's also able to not die if there's too much rain too, you know.
Sure.
Again, I mentioned, I think in our pre-interview, I volunteered named Ken Talbot, but Ken works on the Zara Escape Yard and pretty much manages the whole thing independently, and does a great job. And actually, we just put in a beehive into that community garden this year, where we're gonna start producing our own honey, or attempt to produce our own honey. We'll see how easy it is. And it's an amazing spot for the beehive because of just the continuous options of pollinators that show themselves. It's a good full season pollination zone, because that something is always blooming. You know, it goes from lavender to yarrow to echinacea, and it's all kinds of different things, and it just keeps growing and growing all year. So it's actually been really successful, that beehive, which has been great.
So talk a little bit about the community gardens are places of learning and teaching as well as growing. And education, obviously, is a central issue for the local food initiative in Revelstoke. Maybe you could just describe the range of educational activities that you and the organization undertakes. Obviously, Garden Gurus is a central feature, but there's many others. Why don't you talk about that?
Yeah, so Garden Gurus would be our adult education program. So we run that 6 months a year, and offer workshops and online information to local growers. It's also a resource if someone did want to ask a question, that they could ask the Garden Guru, and they would try to find the answer for them. We also try to really go into youth education. So of the three community gardens, one of them is actually just for education purposes for our preschool program called the Little Sprouts Program. So the Little Sprouts Program starts in March, and we have a coordinator go into the preschools, and they start starts, and then those starts get transplanted into the garden with the preschoolers there, and then they run a weekly meetup all season long, where the families of the preschoolers can come out and get involved in the garden and harvest whatever they'd like, and get their hands dirty. And so that's a really important program for us, and it's a great way to introduce gardening at a really fun early age. And then we continue that youth education program with our farm to table program, which is a grade 5 and grade 9 program, where we have a coordinator go into the high school and the elementary school and start teaching them about the food system. And they get to go on several field trips, including the food bank and the grocery stores, and we get them out to a farm, and we just try to show them the different sizes of our food system and what local food versus non-local food means. We get people to go into the grocery stores and read labels. I think that's something that most adults have never done, is read the label of where their food comes from. And so we get kids to do that. And so it's just a really great program that they run all year round in schools, that just kind of brings the food system into conversation, which is great. So within those three programs, we try to reach kind of all age groups.
There's, as you're describing this, what you're doing, I have the very strong sense that there's a kind of inherent community flavor to all of this. It's probably to some degree a question of size, as when communities get bigger, then the connections within one part of the community and another start to sort of break down. But in some of the material that I got from the website, I noticed the Columbia Basin Trust, Interior Health, the city of Revelstoke itself, all these sort of established entities within the community that are responsible for governance in one area or another, they all seem to be quite involved with the program, or you seem to be quite involved with them. Talk about that a little bit, this kind of intersection between governments of one sort and another and community-based organizations with a broader focus and the local food initiative, how that's shaped what's being done by you and the others.
Yeah, I think it's essential to get different partners to the table. If only one person's sitting at the table, you're not going to get much done. And that's what the Local Food Initiative has either experienced or been fighting against, is that we want to get things done, and to get things done, we need partners. And so the Columbia Basin Trust is a great partner. They do a terrific job of supporting the Local Food Initiative with several different initiatives that we run, and allowing us to really to be who we are and to run the programs we do and support us financially, and through several other programs. Like they have a board program where they help train and set up the board, and so we've used that, the board advisory program, and so we've used that, and they have marketing programs that we've used, and they're a great resource to tap into that really has helped us expand our programs and make sure we have the capability to offer those programs to as many people as want them. As well, the city of Revelstoke, so I think you're right, because we are a small town, we get to be part of the conversation, and that's so important to let us be part of the conversation, you know. And so most recently the city released a new OCP, and within that OCP we got to have a say, and we got to be a player, and we got to have a voice about what's important, and that food security needs to be in there. And then in the recreation plan that the city is producing, and that more food areas is part of that plan, and that we got to have a say at that, you know. I think people are realizing how important a localized food system is, especially with some of the things that have happened to our food system in the last couple of years, you know, with the highways and the floods and the fires, and we're feeling the effects of climate change. And so people are realizing, yeah, this is something that we need to talk about. You know, I had an interesting conversation with one of my friends who doesn't super agree with me politically, and we would vote for different parties for sure. And I said, like, but we can both agree that we need to do something about climate change. And he was like, 100%, we can both agree we need to do something about climate change. And I do think that's a really interesting step forward, because I don't know that 10 years ago, two different parties could have that conversation, you know? It's something that people are realizing we need.
It's interesting as a comparison with Salmon Arms. Salmon Arms City Council has been asked to move food issues up on the agenda, food security in the community up on the agenda, and because it's now a medium-term consideration as opposed to a short-term consideration, and there's a debate going on about that right now. And Salmon Arms is a bit larger and has a little bit more. It's on the sort of main transportation routes, and so a lot of people come through Salmon Arm, and there's a little. As you're describing Revelstoke, it does sound like there's, for whatever reason, maybe it's just the mountains surrounding everybody and sort of making you realize you're a little outpost of humanoids in this giant ecosystem. But there's, I hear more from what you're describing of a sort of community sense that is, it allows you to go to these government forums and say, we're here and this is what we're trying to do. They can understand that you're doing something constructive and that it's going to benefit the community. Is that the sort of sense you have of the atmosphere?
Yeah, it's funny. Actually, I was talking to one of my board members the other day, and she had been at a food basin conference in Invermere that she attended, and someone was talking about how Revelstoke seems to have we seem to be doing a pretty good job, and that we seem to have figured it out. And she said, like, well, we had to. You know, like, there was no one else to lean on. Like I said, you know, 100, you know, an hour away, that's Maliqua, and then you're in a different community, you know. And so, and with the way that our roads are, and how often, you know, Revelstoke can be, I'm Revelstoke, or tourists can be Revelstoke, because both of our highways are closed in both directions, and you are literally stuck in Revelstoke, you know.
You're going nowhere.
I think you're going nowhere. You're not getting out. And so I think that has made us have to be more self-reliant than most communities, because we live by ourselves, you know. And so I think it's something that, although we are in interior BC, it's more unique because we are a little bit more separate from what seems like the rest of the world and what the rest of the people are doing. And I know there's a couple communities like that in BC, but I would definitely say that Revelstoke's one.
It's interesting that you're describing this, because it's quite clear as we reach out more clearly to our indigenous friends and neighbors, we're discovering that they had this sense, the sense you're describing, that you're, you know, you need everybody. You can't just offload people within the community. You have to bring everybody in and have a genuine sense of community. That's very much a principle that operates in indigenous worlds prior to contact with settlers. There was a very strong sense of that. And we have, in Salmon Arm, we have quite a presence of indigenous communities surrounding us. There's reserves right next to the city, and some of the indigenous leaders have played a very active role in the community. Is there that sense in Revelstoke? I know Revelstoke is basically a railroad town initially, and of course embedded in the mountains. Do you have a presence of an indigenous community in Revelstoke?
There is for sure, and we have our Friendship Society, and they do some really important, good work, and they've helped us quite a few times with our acknowledgements and you know, guiding us in making sure that we're taking the appropriate steps and not being white people just forcing our way without being, you know, thoughtful of what else is going on in the world. I unfortunately, Revelstoke was part of an area that actually labeled the Sinix people extinct from the land at one point, which was never true. But the government did say that. And I think that had some really significant, I know that had significant consequences on their population. And I couldn't even imagine what that would be like to be a group that really were deserving and had that land and then to be considered extinct. And I think that the long-term effects of that are still being felt in Revelstoke. I wouldn't say that diversity is our strongest suit. We're a very privileged community. It's very expensive to live here. And therefore it's not always the most accessible for a lot of people and a lot of different groups. And I think that's definitely an obstacle and a barrier in Revelstoke and within our food system that we need to look at and deal with, and that the local food initiative is working on considering considering in all of the ways, all the work that we do. We always try to put a lens on it of, okay, let's think about equity and let's think about the different groups and the different partners we need to get involved. And that's something that we're working on and we're going to continue to work on, and is our job to continue to work on it. So I think a little bit of a loaded question. There is a group of people, a group of Indigenous people doing terrific work here. However, the long-term effects of what we did during colonization is still very evident in Revelstoke, and something that the local food initiative still needs to dedicate a lot of time to working towards.
Yeah, I think that's generally recognized, and I think that's an important point that we all have to start thinking about that. I was looking through the president's report from April of this year, at which time your inauguration as executive director was very fresh, because your predecessor had just given birth and was obviously had other concerns on her mind. The core group of the local food initiative, is there some kind of defining quality in the group that unites you? That, I mean, obviously food is a process, local food, enhancing the development of local food, but sort of in terms of how you work together as a team, are there some defining characteristics that make it work for your group?
I think the overlying love we all have for our community is a big part of it. I'm not going to say this as a fact, but I feel like every person that's joined the board has probably moved to Revelstoke in the last like 10 years. Maybe I'm lying about that. Maybe 15 years. Maybe Mel's been here for longer. And maybe that could be wrong. Maybe one of them is a local, and I'm sorry if they are.
I will say one thing. The number of people who've come from Ontario is quite astonishing.
It's probably
about two-thirds of your core group.
Yeah, exactly. And so I would say that we all chose to be here. You know, no one, I think in a lot of communities, I don't know that people often make an active choice to be somewhere, and we have all chosen to be in that community. And so that love that we have for that community it acts as the baseline for everything we do, because we all want to be there and we want this place to stay as incredible and be even more incredible than it is. So I think that kind of sits as the base. I think the kind of people we are, you know, they're all a group of passionate people. I would say they all see a need to do something. And I think that's a big calling right now with the way the climate is and the way the world is that there's this overall feeling of like, okay, you need to be doing something for good now. You know, like, so you need to do something in your day to do good. And all the people that sit on my board feel that need. Not only do they love the community, but they know that we're in a state in the world where every individual needs to be doing something in their life for good.
I'm very struck by the fact that all except one of your core group members are women, many of them young women, but also women. And that's actually the largest growing demographic in the food sector in British Columbia is women, and especially young women, and women who have not been part of the farm scene in their early years. They've wandered into it, and they are drawn to it and attracted to it, and then they want to become active participants in it. But maybe you could comment on what it's like to... What is it that draws that energy from women who care? I mean, there's many, many organizations that are dominated by women when there's a fundamental caring principle at work. But why don't you just say something about that? Because it is quite striking, and it's quite gratifying in a way to see this leadership role being played by what is essentially a group of young women.
Yeah, I think... you know, I think that the world is in a place, right? And I think that climate change is happening around us, and that things aren't always looking great, and that it can be quite daunting. And I think that women have sat on the sidelines for a long time and kind of been put there. And I think that we're getting to a point where, like, okay, we need to do something because what's happening isn't working. And so I think that as women, and just as humans in the world, we're realizing the system that we have isn't working. So what's the current system? The current system is men are in charge in a lot of different places. And that system isn't really working that well for us, right? And so, and not just men, like, to be honest, white men, right? And so, mm-hmm. like, the whole thing needs to change. We need to have diversity. If it's women, if it's people of color, if it's people that have different backgrounds, you know what I mean? So, yeah, it just... I think that it's that a lot of people were forced to the sidelines for a long time, first of all. And so now we're in a world where they're not being forced to the sideline, and there's more acceptance in us coming out. And B, like, they're getting fed up. We're fed up. We want the world to be better. I want the world to be a better place. I want to have a world that I can have children in and that can live and eat and flourish and love this amazing environment that I've been able to love. And right now we're not on the track for that to happen. And so women are coming up and saying, listen, what are we going to do here? Because the systems that are currently in place, they're not going to figure it out. So we have to. And so just these different people that are taking this different angle on how to fix the problem.
The that people who are coming up, that phrase that you just used, reminded me of how active you are in the school system. And I'd like you to describe how your relationship with the formal education system has been working, because this is the generation of people who, like all of us now, everyone, it's very hard to be ignorant on the subject of the climate crisis because it's beating us over the head with a stick. How are you finding your work in getting into the education system, the formal system, and bringing your programs there? How's that been going? What's the kind of reception you're receiving?
Yeah, to be honest, like, again, I think I work in a really good environment for this kind of work because the schools are looking for us to be connected to them, and they want an area to grow, and they see the need to develop. I think that, unfortunately, like everything, bureaucracy is slow, and so, like, you know, do we have community gardens in all the schools? No. Is there interest in community gardens in all the schools? Yeah, a little bit, but bureaucracy kind of slows you down, you know? And so, which is one of the things with climate change is, like, we need to do things now, you know? We need to stop talking about doing things in 5 or 10 years or making it a medium priority. It's not a medium priority. It's a now priority. There's tons of science to back that up, you know? And so I do think that the school systems know that, and I think they're taking that in. And I think there's some teachers within the Revelstoke school system specifically that feel a lot of responsibility to teach their kids about that, and so that they welcome us into their classes rooms and have supported our programs. You know, specifically Graham Gale at the high school, he always does a great job at bringing us into his class and letting us talk. He's a science teacher, and so he knows, like, you know, he knows what the science is saying. He knows that we're one of the solutions, so let's get us in there. And so I think that we're really lucky because we have this community that does want us to be a part of them, and we have this great school system, and we have great teachers. But I also think that more can always be done, and more can be done more quickly. And there's tons of room to increase our reach, and there's tons of room to increase what we're talking about as far as the food systems go.
Now, in the report from your president, she makes note of the fact that there are now two new committees, and very much along the line of what we're just saying, talking about now, the Food Commons Committee and the Equity and Inclusion Committee. So it sounds like there's an evolutionary process going on within the ranks of the food, the local food initiative, that coming to terms with the fact that mobilizing the community means this inclusivity has to be part of it, this sense of everybody counts as a formal thing rather than just sort of an aspirational goal. It's a formal thing. We got to start doing this and somehow make this happen. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, I think it's important, you know, words are words, but actions are what we actually need to do, right? And so I think it's tremendously important that we talk about things and we have acknowledgements and we put up signs, and all of those things are very important, but making sure that our day-to-day work is inclusive and accessible to everyone is actually what needs to be done. And so, for instance, right now we're redoing our strategic planning. We're doing our strategic planning process, and making sure that we're coming to that with an equitable lens on the whole process, because, you know, if we don't come to the table with a plan that is going to include everyone, we're not going to have programs that are going to include everyone. And thinking beyond just what you or I think is going to be an obstacle, like, what is actually an obstacle, you know? And so thinking, yeah, it might not just be the car ride or the bike, or it might be that there has been generations and generations of trauma here that are stopping people from getting involved. And so then how do you put that into the equation, and how do you start planning for that? And although we have a lot of work to do, I think talking about it, making a committee and making sure there's people dedicated to focusing on that solely is the first big step, you know. And not just letting it be a side thought, making it a forethought, you know.
Another thing that you've become involved in, and we're going to coming to the end of the program just now, is the garden and art tour. And a lot of people are understanding that artistic expression is a way to get through to people. You can reach them with music, with visual arts, with performing arts, etc. Just briefly, because as I said, we're nearing the end of the show, what's the content in that particular process, the Garden and Art Tour?
Yeah, the Garden Art Tour is a way that we celebrate some of the amazing local gardens that people are producing in their own backyards, while also celebrating our local artists. Like I said, you know, we have this food community, and there's a bunch of great little communities in Revelstoke. We're getting more players to the table is the most important thing. And so that tour brings both the art community and the food community together. And it really makes it so that we have one event that celebrates a bunch of different parts of our community and brings different people to the event and shows off different parts of what our town has to offer.
So do you have a little art and a little music in the tour?
Yeah, so every garden has a piece of art and a local artist at it, either selling or just showing off their art. And then we have a concert at the end with, this year we actually had a local artist throughout the exhibit just painting one of her paintings. And so if you watched her from the beginning of the day to the end, she finished one of her paintings, and then it went up in the Visual Arts Center the next month or something like that. So that was really cool.
What a brilliant concept. It's because art integrates all of our values. You can show in an image things that you can't show in a photograph. Kelsey Gasparini, Executive Director of the Local Food Initiative in Revelstoke, I want to thank you very much for being on our show, for your lively energy. It's clear that Revelstoke's gain, Sudbury has lost, and Revelstoke has gained by you transporting yourself across the continent. And tell your mother that we're very happy to have you out here on this side of the Rockies. And thank you very much again. Thank you again for being on our show today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a real pleasure.